Blog Talk Radio.
Kentucky. Yes, yes, hold on. Just hold on. Everything's going to be all right. Just hold on. And I want to kick this out. This is, you know, it says the sound of blackness. And I'll be coming back to this is the spirit. You know, it's going to be a real spirit about these last 3 months as we're going out. It's going to take the right spirit to pull off what we're trying to pull off. So I just want to roll this on. We're going to take the right spirit. We're going to require the right spirit. So I just want to roll this right on into the sound of black. I'll be right back.
Sister, everybody,
It's time to make your back go away. Boy, I cook you like filet. Doomsday is for any MC that don't obey. Cause today, I mean, listen. Now the black kids raise the spirit like a two-ton grain, and I'll remain till you hear it. When you feel it. This show is Craig Mack with the fat folk flame, and I'm about to attack.
Stability that this country has formulated its greatness from. This is not an emotional conversation. This is an intelligent conversation. And the reason why that I'm excited about I'm going to constantly be talking about the sounds of blackness. You know, what is the sounds of blackness as I'm playing the sounds of blackness music? But I actually is a motive and purpose of why I'm saying the sounds of blackness. You know, we got to learn to break free from the indoctrination of the color caste system. That's the only way that we're going to be able to significantly identify ourselves in the new year in 2019. We literally have to go ahead and start implementing, controlling the narrative, communicating, and talk about this indoctrination based on color. And so the sounds of blackness means that I've, me, Sean T. Daniels, as I'm hoping my other partners and everything would understand when I'm talking about the sounds of blackness, we literally, you know, need to be acting like we are the carrier of the antidote. When we hear and listen to people who's speaking and communicating in their captured communication and dialogue, like they speaking from color, blackness, we have to quickly, immediately, somehow, some way, inject them with knowledge of understanding that you're speaking from an indoctrination. And that's what this, as I'm moving forward in every show going into the new year, I'm going to constantly be talking about working on trying to convert the 12 to 13%, the 45 million people of us. We're only trying to get 1% to 25%, but 1% right now going into the new year. We're trying to break you from that indoctrination, that speaking in blackness, talking in blackness, communicating in blackness, that color indoctrination. So, you know, there is a uniqueness about us that we don't have to be speaking and communicating in an indoctrination that we captured by it in color. And that's what that sounds of blackness. As soon as I hear it, now, I've been walking in this now since Mr. Norris introduced me to America's Little Black Book. And I gladly acknowledged and accepted that I was not a Negro, wasn't black, and wasn't an African-American, and I gladly accepted that I am a descendant of American slaves. The moment that I communicated and started walking into that, it was like I'm going to keep it 100. It's kind of like I was free. I'm no longer captured in the bondage any longer. I was no longer... I could see things entirely different because I was able to now recognize that, hey, you know what? It is true. It's kind of like I've been operating and captured in a matrix. And as one of my partners says, who told you you was black? Who told you, who made us see ourselves from color? What was the intention when you ask yourself, what was the purpose and intention of someone telling you you were black so you can see them as white? What was the intention of this color conversation? And if we're still speaking and communicating in the color caste conversation, doesn't that mean we're still indoctrinated and we're still carrying on the same indoctrination, the same infection, the same virus, the same bamboozle, the same intentions of what the whole reason why color was introduced in the first place? See, I'm hoping that those who listen to this message, that you will be able to understand that DASI, Descendants of American Slaves, Inc., incorporated in the state of Kentucky, Missouri, and North Carolina, and looking to incorporate in other states, specifically the 15 slave states, the known 15 slave states. We're hoping to be able to put chapters in each and every one of those states that's going to be representing DASI. And we're going to be talking about education. We believe that we're going to be the deprogrammers. We're going to be the ones to help create a new conversation. I'm starting to really believe and be very adamant about and focus at it's the focus show, following one course until successful. I'm really starting to really see the need why we need to start controlling our own narrative. We need to stop allowing people to tell us our perspective. We need to go back in history, and we need to capture the history concerning us, and we need to rewrite it and start telling it. But see, we need to write it from a post-awakening conversation versus a pre-indoctrination. See, we gotta speak it and look at it from a post-awakening, and so go back and you start re-examining. It's kind of like you got to do a relook at exactly what took place in 1776 in Virginia in the 13 colonies, and do they really represent the economic, social justice that this country has built its wealth on? And if the first generation of slaves represents the economic, social justice that this country has built this foundation on, then that means that the descendants of American slaves is vested into America. We have ownership in America. And we got to change our conversation from thinking from ownership versus renting. And that's when you're not talking in the sounds of blackness. You now start talking like an owner of America. Your contributions has already been paid. You understand that you are seeds of people that was already have dropped and carved away and died and blood shed. You understand that you are a continuation of people who's already done the work, the heavy work. They've already done the work. They have already sowed the seeds for your current success today. It causes you to be able to think differently, look at things differently, talk differently, engage differently, make people see you differently, make people see that you're an asset versus being a liability. It causes you to realize that I am something because those who have laid down their lives for me. If you don't understand the first generation of slaves that was born after 1619, before 1776, and they represent the economic seeding, the foundation of America. If you don't understand that, then that's what we have to talk about as we're trying to recruit and bring more people. We got to help some folks unlearn and relearn into a better understanding of what's going on. I noticed that I ain't got nobody. I got one person on the line. We have a partner holding. Nobody there listening. So I'm using this as an opportunity to share and to bring people on board and to get better understanding about what we're trying to do. And let me go ahead and bring my partner on board here. What's up, Mr. Leonard E. Walker from North Carolina? Welcome to the Focus Show, man. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. Doing well. Can't complain. Busy.
Hey, you sound like you're talking in a hole, man. I can barely hear you.
Hello. How about now? Can we hear me?
I can hear you much better now. I know you heard me. I played the two musics there, Sounds of Blackness. The reason why I picked that song, as I was last week when I went to have a meeting with Marcus and I put my music on in my car and Sounds of Blackness started playing. Then, Leonard, I played the music all the way up and played the music all the way back. And then it hit me. There is, at least for myself, I am quickly to recognize when people are now captured, when they start talking, and I start hearing them using color, you know, like three, four, where every word coming out of their mouth, the white man or black this, black that. I start realizing that I can actually hear the indoctrination of people that I'm communicating with. It's like the sounds of blackness. And that's what that means to me when I think about the sounds of blackness. I'm at a point now, Leonard, that when I'm listening to people talking, man, I can quickly identify that I'm talking to someone who's indoctrinated. I'm talking to someone who's infected, man. This person's still captured and everything. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I hear you. I hear what you're saying. I think what we have to, I mean, if let's just analyze the name of that group by itself, Sounds of Blackness, okay? When we think about the literal definition of black or blackness, what black is, on a color scale, black is the color that is invisible to the naked eye because you have no frequencies bouncing back, okay? No frequencies bouncing back. So that's the way color works, is we are able to see colors with our eyes because color is light frequency, okay? Black is the absence of all light frequency. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, my God, that's bad. That's terrible. But understand one thing. There's a flip side to that. There's a flip side to that. And the positive part to that is that it is the black part of the eye that receives the light of knowledge, okay? So that's the positive. The negative is like I said, is when sounds of blackness. Black is something that is visible. But what is the sound? So that means that blackness or black is something symbolic. It could be the sound of suffering, the sound of a people who have been oppressed, the sound of slaves, the sound of those who have risen up from slaves, the sound of a situation that has binded a group of people, chattel slavery. In the African term, it's called the Great Miafia. Okay, you could use all of that. What we have to get away, just like what Nishan is saying, is we have to be not so much be captured by the actual physical color itself. All right, and the reason I say that is because I can talk to people. And I'll give you a good example, okay? When we talk about black and white. Let's go to a predominantly black high school in Jefferson County, okay? Something like maybe with 2,000 students, okay? Go to a predominantly black high school in Jefferson County. Let's say the school is 95-98% quote-unquote black or African-American, all right? Now, let's say they had a pep rally, okay? They had a pep rally, you know, all of the students in the auditorium, filling all of the seats and, you know, they're having a pep rally for the football team and trying to get them pumped up for the season opener or for the homecoming game. And you look around and you see all of these people who are of African descent, okay? Now, of all of those people, when you look to see how many are truly the absolute color black, skin color wise, I dare to say you'd find very few, if not any, that are absolutely shellac tar black, okay? So what you will see is a vast majority of people who are brown in skin color, all right? Brown in lighter shades, darker shades, medium shades. Coffee color, coffee, black coffee is actually brown. Okay, it's a dark, dark brown. So how is it if you had 2,000 students, okay, and not even a handful to maybe, you know, one or two, maybe three, four, you know, a couple of students out of 2,000 are actually pretty close to maybe the color black and everybody else is a shade of brown, but everybody in the auditorium is black. Okay? That's how do you ignore, okay, so these people are really brown, but we're going to call them black. That means black has a different meaning, okay, because then your skin color, okay? You have somebody, a light-skinned person. Oh, that person is black. Wait a minute. How is that person black and his skin color is not black? So that has some sort of different meaning.
So it has a social connect. All you're talking about, and I'm glad that you actually gone there. That's the whole reason why this topic, and for the next 3 months now, is it will be called Sounds of Blackness. Because, see, Leonard, I like that you're talking about that because, you know, if I can just say this for real, okay, I am almost certain that culturally we have never had a discussion about this. Why are we called black? And why is a color that majority of us don't even look like? And what was the purpose of the color introduced? I would dare to say, Leonard, that we have never talked about why was color used and why is it targeted on us when color is a description. Would you agree? Would you agree that we have accepted it and we have embraced it, but we don't even realize that we're captured in something that we didn't call ourselves? And not one African, if you were to go back to the slaves and everything, woke up and called themselves black. Would you agree with that?
I would agree. Matter of fact, I have a better question. Not so much why were we called black, but what is it about us? What qualifies a person for being black? Okay, I mean, you got all different types of people. What makes a person black?
What's the motivation for you calling this individual black? What's the methodology?
What qualifies this person as being black, or what qualifies as being white? When you look at these colors, okay, nobody else is called a color. Now you got, you know, Latino people, they try to use brown. You don't call Asian people yellows.
But it is dominant as white. So what's the motive and the purpose between this distinction? This is what I'm talking about. I'm done with this emotional conversation and doing something with don't have no reason why I'm doing it, just doing it just to do it. Hey, what's up, Keith? Your line is open, man. You can jump in there anytime you want, man.
Go ahead, Keith. I'm listening. No, I'm listening. It's interesting.
Yeah, so the conversation is, you know, how often have we actually sat down and had a conversation about why we call black and why we call black? So you talk to me, Leonard. You are much seasoned and known and knowledgeable, and why have we taken on it, and why hasn't it been addressed and communicated with us culturally?
Well, like I said, it's black is just basically the English translation of the word Negro. Okay, what is a Negro? Okay, that's when the Spaniards and the Portuguese went into Africa, all right, and they were purchasing slaves, all right. They didn't go in as a occupying force, conquering people and just indiscriminately taking children, because what we have to understand is 95% of all of the slaves brought from Africa to the West, all right, in the transatlantic slave trade, were between the ages of 13 and 16 years old. Okay, so that's basically going into a village and taking this village's children. All right, so I'm just not going to buy that, because a slave ship only carried about 100 people, and I don't care if they had weapons, if they had rifles. At that time, they would have had a flintlock, which is a single shot. Let's say 100 men with 100 rifles shot 100 times and hit 100 Africans in a village. We think about villages like maybe 50 people, small. That's not the case. Villages had thousands of people. So let's say you had 1,000 warriors with spears. 1,000 warriors with spears versus 100 Europeans with rifles. There's no way these Europeans would have been able to overpower 1,000 spears, even though they had, even though they, it's just by attrition. There's no way by the sheer numbers. So there was a slave trade already in place that Europeans got involved in, and they said, okay, well, we need some of these. We'll call these people Negroes. Even why did they call them Negroes? They would call them, they called them Negroes for legal reasons. All right. If you were to call an African by their tribal name, say, yeah, we're going to buy some Ashanti or some Wolof or some
You would have had to recognize their humanity.
Listen, no, they don't care about the humanity. Forget about that part. Let's talk about the legal part. They would have to recognize their sovereignty. All right?
The sovereignty. Which is humanity,
exactly. So as a sovereign group of people, see, here's what would have happened. If you would have went and got some Igbo or some Wolof people, by all rights, all right, the Igbo or Wolof people could have come and waged war against.
Is that what the Amistad trial was all about?
They could have waged war against the people trying to enslave them, okay, legally, all right? And, you know, at that time, Spain, France, England, the Dutch, all of these people, they were in a war.
European countries.
Yeah, Europeans were in a war with each other, so they could not, you know, go out and war against African nations as well. So, like I said, is by calling the slaves Negro, these are people that did not belong to anybody, did not have any sovereignty, all right, and were not even human beings. Okay, that's kind of how they looked at it. These are not human beings because they don't have, they're not covered under human law and can be relegated to property. They could be a commodity. These were commodified or commoditized human beings, right? So, like I said, so you had, you know, a slave trade just like with anything else, you know, out of Africa. Africans, you know, traded many different commodities, and then one of them was the human commodity, all right, as slaves. All right, this is documented history. Nothing that I'm saying is false. All right,
and you know, Leonard. So now, excuse me for Leonard. This is the reason why I called you today and said, man, we need to stop trying to make it all perfect and pretty, brother. You got some good knowledge. You need to start recording this stuff because I can assure you, like Keith is listening and other people, that we've never had. Many of us have never had this unlearned understanding about how the conversation of black been identified to us, and we just been taking it. You know, it's kind of like when I was with my parents. You know, when I was as a child, I don't know no difference than my parents. You know, it's not only until I grew up and so I realized that, you know, and this is just me. I'm not talking about nobody else. I got to talk about my family. I started realizing when my mother and father was, you know, when I was a child, all I did is obeyed everything they said, okay, because, you know, they were my parents. At some point, and I can tell you for me, at 16 or 17, growing up in Miami in a household where there was a whole lot of not so wholesome good things going on, it got to a point that I no longer started looking at my parents in the same manner because, you know, I started realizing that they weren't living or living up to the way that they've been claiming this authority over me. This is the same kind of thing that we have to question ourselves. This indoctrination that we have been allowing ourselves to be captured in, who has it benefited, okay? I want you to speak to that, okay? Because, see, the whole reason why we're going to be saying Sounds of Blackness, and we're trying to recruit people. And, I was on Queen's page, and I'm listening and watching, reading stuff, and, you know, hearing all these people that keep coming in and talking about black this, black that. And every time I hear them speaking in that black terminology, using it, all I'm saying, these people are still indoctrinated. How can we – we got to help these people get from this indoctrination. And so we need to start the process where we start having these type of conversations. How did we get to be black? And who has benefited from the terminology black? Did it make sense?
That makes sense. And here's what we have to do. All right. First and foremost, all right, this is not about hating black or self-hate, because that's what that can be perceived as. Hate Africans. You hate yourself. This is self-hate.
No, this is not
self-hate. This is self-analysis. All right. We have to understand. Okay. So black was something created to make us be inferior. All right. To be part of an inferior caste. All right. So here's what I said to myself. I said, you know what? I would rather be betrayed by my own than conquered by others.
Thank you.
Let me say that again. I'd rather be betrayed by my own than conquered by others. Why is that? Why would you say that? Because if I'm conquered by others, that means whoever has conquered me is superior, and I can never come back and beat them, ever. But if I'm betrayed by my own, I can look at my history and say, okay, brothers, we made this mistake. I forgive you, all right? But we cannot afford to hate. We cannot afford to hate each other. We cannot afford to fall for the tricks of the enemy and all of that kind of stuff ever again. This is how we fail, all right? So this means that we were a great people at one time, and these people didn't beat us. We actually beat ourselves, all right? I would rather say we have beat ourselves than to say somebody is greater than we are, because that means that we have a boogeyman. I live life with no boogeyman. So,
and Leonard, conversation right there, that's what I love about the Dossie language, and I'm hoping, like Queen, we can get more women involved with us, and we can get more brothers and everything involved. That what you just said, that I rather believe, I just choose to believe that we deceived ourselves than to believe that I got conquered. That's what I'm with you with that. Actually, I said that myself, okay, not using exactly those words, but I'd rather totally believe we deceived ourselves, okay, than to believe that someone conquered me, okay? Because just like you think, to say that, to say that someone conquered me is to say that they are superior to me. And this is the conversation that I constantly be hearing and seeing when I hear people use the terminology white, all the white man, the white. You know, there's a Vincent Pearl said in a book, he says, you are dominant by that you say the most. Did you hear that before? You know, that you give power to and you say out your mouth the most is what you give an authority over you. Have you heard that before?
I've heard something similar, yeah. It's like, as a man thinketh, so as he does, so as he is. So, you know, so if you think this thing, then you'll say these things, and then that will become your reality manifested. So if you continuously say that this man is, oh my gosh, they done did this, they done did that, or this has done this, or this wields the power over me, or this has the power, this thing right here has been our downfall, or so on. So we have a choice, all right? If within us, there are instincts, okay? And if something within your instincts say this just ain't quite right,
right,
you go ahead anyway. And you go ahead anyway, all right? And it gets the better of you. Learn a lesson from that. So trust your instincts, okay? Trust your instincts. Learn a lesson from that. But also, in trusting your instinct, okay, understand that I have a choice. And I didn't trust my instinct, and I chose this, so this is on me. You know, somebody presented me with something, okay, and I didn't feel right about it. And I went ahead anyway, so I can't blame that person if that person, you know, had ill intent for me, all right? I have to blame because I seen what was coming. You know, I mean, at some point, just like it's common sense.
Right. You know? I had a sense this wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
But I allowed myself to be induced by it. Then you can't continue pointing fingers at someone that you sense that it ain't right, but you continue repeating it over and over and over. This is why this sounds of blackness is so important. We got to start hearing the sounds of blackness in our own conversation to learn how to check it in ourselves. Wouldn't you agree to that, Queen?
To some degree, I do, and to some degree, I I wouldn't say that I disagree, but I would like for us to understand our American culture, because 95% of the people in America know that what you know as black are descendants of American slaves. They innately know that. But what we did was, just like we do everything else, when we are met with adversity, then we turn what is ugly into something beautiful. So at one time, you were a black nigger. You were a black jigaboo. You were a black slave. You know, you were a black bitch. You were a black whore. You were black everything. And everything that was black was negative. You know, you black, you got devil's food cake, but angel food cake is white. So there are a lot of things that came out of the negativity of our suffering. But then at the same time, we started saying black is beautiful, black pride, black power. So those are some things that we culturally turned around in the face of adversity to try to make something black ugly. But we all know that we are descendants of American slaves. It is more so the behavior that needs to change and the mindset that needs to change. Because, see, if your mind is still shackled, you're still a slave. So you can say black power, you can say black is beautiful, but if you say it with the knowledge of I'm inferior to white people, or the feeling, whether, of that you're inferior to white people, you're inferior to everything white, then that's the problem. So just like on that post that I posted up, I said that all of my life I was told that the white man was the devil. But everybody that's caused me harm look like me. And I said that for a reason, because that is how I gather consensus of the thinking. And, of course, most of my Muslim brothers and sisters, they chimed in, and they chimed in with the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And what I never found in all of those comments, and you saw them yourself, it's about 70-something comments on there.
Yes, sir.
What I found was that nobody actually gave accountability to our forefathers. And
thank you.
What is absent is the history of slavery in its entirety. What is focused on is the brutality that we suffered under slavery. So when you talk about when you first became a slave, when you talk about when you first became a nigger, when you talk about when you were first brutalized and victimized and dehumanized, then you better talk about that continent called Africa, because that is where it started. That is how we got here. We were traded off. We were sold off, the least of us. So if we were not of a powerful tribe, or if we were crippled, or if we were mute, and we had a strong back, we were traded off, and we were sold off, and we were negotiated off with Europeans. The Europeans didn't come over there and invade Africa and say, okay, we're going to take all you slaves over there to America. That is not how that started. And once we start holding accountability, then you can get into the knowledge of self. Because as long as you have somebody to blame, you're transferring the responsibility of your own humanity. So the reason why people would be reluctant to say I'm descendants of American slaves, because now you've become so black and you've become so prideful that, oh, slave is such a dehumanizing name. But you were dehumanized by somebody that looked like you. So when you say that you are descendants of American slaves, you better damn well know what they went through. You better damn well know what they went through on their own land before they even came over here. So there, and if you want a glimpse into the past, then open your eyes to the present. Because we don't talk about Africa in the way that we should talk about Africa. Because we want to believe, and it's easy to believe, that at one time on this great continent called Africa, that we were kings and queens, and we were the head of moral authority, and we were over everybody, and everybody was loving God, and it was peaceful, and it was beautiful, and it was bullshit all at the same time. And right now today, they killing babies. Right now today, a dominating tribe will come in there and rape your 10-year-old, will castrate your 8-year-old son, will rape your grandmother, will lynch you from a tree, will take all your goods and your merchandise that your family or your village has worked hard for. That goes on in 2018 in Africa. So we got to look at the culture from which we came. Now, here's the question. Here's the real question. Did we learn all of this dehumanizing from white people? Or did white people learn it from us?
Ooh.
That's the question.
And that leads me to take, I'm gonna take that to Keith. You've been listening to that. She just opened up a can of worms there, Keith. What you say to that, Queen?
Yeah, she opened a big can of worms. I don't think we have enough time to conclude on that. We might have another series. That's deep.
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy there, Miss Queen.
No,
that's not an analogy,
Miss Sean. Beg your pardon. That's not an analogy. And what you have to understand that there are certain traditions that are still being kept. And all of my life, the tradition in my family has been kept, and that the stories of 6 generations before my grandfather were told in folklore. So I know what the Maasai tribe did, and I know what they did to other villages. And I know that South Africa was a place of darkness to the people who were in the northern region. And I know that one of my great-great-great-great-grandmothers escaped from Nigeria to go up north to avoid the slave trade. And her stories came with her and how her parents, because she had a club foot, wanted to sell her off, and how she was strapped, and how she broke through those straps in the darkness and made her way through the jungles of Africa and got mule rides and horse rides to make her way up to northern Africa. And I know the stories of how my great-great-great-grandfather hid her in the bushes of Kenya because she was Igbo. So they were not going to be accepting of her. So I know the folklore. And that is what we don't get into, because it's not the written word, but it's the spoken word passed down from generation to generation to generation to generation. And that is the true story that I've gotten from my family and from my elders that I still talk to that are in Africa today. So my connection to my family in Africa is very close, and it's not, you know, that other people don't have that fortune, but I will not excuse Africa's role in slavery because they planted the seed. They planted the seed for slavery. They opened the door to slavery. They created it. And so in order for us here in America, descendants of American slaves, you better damn well hold the right people accountable, because I'm telling you, that blaming the white man is easy. It's easy.
Amen.
It's easy to say. It's just like when your brother or your cousin or your friend or just a brother in general gets shot up in the street by the police. It's easy to say those white racist cops pumped 20 bullets into Ray Ray. But you never ask, what was Ray Ray doing on the corner at 3 o'clock in the morning? Why did Ray Ray have a gun? Why is Ray Ray selling dope? You never ask the question of what are you doing to be under suspicion. And I'm not saying that all the brothers and sisters out there are doing wrong. Clearly,
right,
there are some that were not doing wrong. But you got a lot of them. You pass them by every day, hanging on the corners, got their hoodies on, hiding in the dark, switching money, passing dope. You know what they're doing. But when the cops roll up on them, what is a cop supposed to do? Oh, they're going to peacefully surrender. They're shooting up their own in their community. I know they don't give a damn about me, so I'm going to come out blasting. Yeah, that's the mentality. Who created it, though? Who created it? We want to talk about police brutality? Well, you talk about the cops that got to answer the call when we shooting one another. And I promise you, it'll outweigh how they come into our community and kill us 10,000 to one, because we're dying by the 10,000s every day at the hands of one another. So you ask about where that culture comes from.
Ooh, yeah, sounds of blackness. Sounds of blackness. Okay. Yeah, Queen, relax. You know, put your feet up. Put your feet up.
All right. I'm sorry.
So,
my bad.
So let me chime in on that. Is you see the symptoms. You see the scars of the disease. Now we have to look at the cure, because we know,
exactly,
like I said, is you know, all this stuff you see in Chicago, 70-some people shot, 50-some people shot. Listen, I grew up in Chicago, and I know that was not the only difference you have now than back then is you have a better method of reporting all of this stuff, because, you know, people will try to say, oh, no, it was less numbers back then. No. It's always been like this. As long as you had, you know, gangs, understand we are people, a tribal people. Marcus Garvey said that the downfall of us would be tribalism. And we practice tribalism, whether it's the Fang versus the Betty people, or if it's the Blood versus Crips, Disciples versus Vice Lords. We are still practicing tribalism. We are not one people. The only thing
right.
in America that unites us in America is the fact that we are descendants of slaves. And that is our point of unity. All right? So what we have to say to ourselves, okay, is our slave ancestors, okay, Kanye West, you know, said, sounds like that was a choice. The slaves chose to be slaves. No. They chose to endure slavery, okay? No one chooses to be a slave. They chose to endure slavery because they held hope that maybe one day.
But they decided to enjoy humanity.
That's how they fought back. They said, "You've taken everything away from me, but I'm still going to love. I'm still going to have children. I'm still going to have a family. I'm still going to do the things that human beings do when they love
right.
each other, when they care, you know, all of the stuff." So that's the way they fought back. But here's the thing, all right? Our ancestors did not endure slavery. And let's just get graphic, okay? Our ancestors didn't endure rape, boys and girls. Our ancestors didn't endure incest, forced incest, because that's where the word MF came from, all right, if we want to be real about it. Our ancestors did not endure whips and lashes and all of the types of things. Our ancestors did not endure rape parties, okay? Our ancestors did not endure being property, working till your hands bled, working with broken or dislocated limbs. They have dug up slaves that had broken and dislocated limbs, and they have worked right through a broken arm or broken leg. He'll have to pick cards. He had to. Our ancestors did not endure all of that. People want to say Dr. King is turning over in his grave. No. Our slave ancestors are spinning in their graves just
right.
Like they was on, just like they was on a rotisserie, all right, because they didn't endure all of that for us to call ourselves niggers, all right, whether it be good or bad. They didn't endure all of that for us to be thugs and gangsters and hoes and pimps and for all of the things that we're doing. So if there has to be a point of unity, the point of unity has to be that we are descendants of slaves and our slaves paid a cost for us to have a right to vote, for us to have a right to own weapons, or to be United States citizens covered under the U.S. Constitution, for us to be able to own businesses, all right, and to make money and to have fortune and open schools,
right,
all right, and do all the things that we have to do to advance our people. They did not, okay, they did not do all of this stuff. But every time we shoot each other up, we know all of this kind of stuff. And then, like I said, it's a lot of people say, well, you know, that's a big deal, okay? It's higher. Our homicide rates among ourselves, we're 13%, but our homicide rates are higher than any other people in America. Our
right.
broken homes, they did not, our ancestors walked across state from state. The walk from North Carolina to Kentucky is 370 miles, okay? So that's like walking, that's like 2 weeks worth of walking, right? So they did not walk that far to reunite with family members that were sold off, all right? They had to hunt and find where was my child sold at. They had this plantation. Then they go to that plantation somewhere where they would walk for months, years possibly, to reunite their family. They did not do all of that so that we could have an epidemic of single parents with moms and dads nowhere to be around. All this. They didn't do all of that for that. This has to be our motivation, our point of
right.
unity. All right, we have to change as a culture because if for no other reason. All right, this is why I say find out who your slave ancestor is. I know several of mine. Find out who that person is and understand what they went through. How did my slave ancestor go from North Carolina to Tennessee? Well, he was sold. Really? Okay. So like I said, we didn't go through all of that. My ancestors, they didn't go through all of that just so we could be and continue to be at the bottom of this nation. All right?
Right.
So that has to be our motivation. And this is the message that we have to say when we talk about Dossi language membership. You know, this has to be the movement because we have to turn our culture around. Nothing else has worked so far. Nothing else. So let's, you know, if we want to, and like I said, brothers and sisters that want to hold on to Africa, I don't have no problem with that because guess what? The pathway to Africa is through America, okay?
That's right.
We have to reconcile what we have done here in America first before we can go to Africa. And that's a definite option right there. But we want to, if we want to honor our African ancestors as well, let's honor some of their tradition, the tradition of family. Family.
Right.
This was an African, like I say, family, all right? The keeping families intact, all right? Being honorable, you know, being, like I said, it's fathers and mothers. You have children, okay? We need a culture of, hey, listen, okay? We're not ready to have kids yet. We're going to have kids when we're ready, okay?
Right.
That's how our African ancestors did it. All right, that's how they did it. They, you know, it was a process. It's a, and then the whole community got around them. The men got with the boys or the young men, and the women got with the young ladies. And there were rites of passage, and there was encouragement. And it's because, like I said, it's all of these types of things. So we don't have that anymore. Okay, so these are things, if you want to honor Africa, we can adopt those types of parts of our culture, okay?
Right.
And continue on with that. But yet and still, like I said, is even our enslaved ancestors, all right? Our American slave ancestors adopted these types of things. They was holding on to family. They said, you know what? You're not going to stop me from loving this woman right here or this man right here and having their children, and having children, having a family. I know that they could be sold off, and they did it anyway. Even knowing that master at any given time could sell my children away from me or come in and rape my wife or my son, okay, whenever they wanted. I couldn't do it, and they still held on to him. And like I said, if that's not important to you, you know,
this is why
I say know your slave ancestors. Go back and find out who that person is, because then it's not just those people a long time ago. It becomes somebody that's part of your family that endured these types of things. So now you ask yourself, all right, I'm in the place that I am. We are, I'm going to say just like Dr. Smallwood, we are the best, okay? We are the best representation or the best, of all of our ancestors, okay? We are the most improved, all right? Each time we have a child, we improve upon ourselves, okay? But we can't do that without a legacy, all right? So we have to go back to our ancestors and say, am I making my ancestor proud? Would my ancestor be proud of me for what I'm doing, okay? You know, and if the question is no, or if you don't care, all right, you got to start caring. I can't make a person care. But for those who care, all right, and you ask yourself, is my ancestor, am I getting the education I am? Am I out here doing what, am I an honest person? All right, am I taking advantage of the things that they were denied, okay, that they were legally denied? Am I taking advantage of it because they opened the door for me to have these things? See, so this is what we got to push, all right? This is our point of unity. All of us are descendants of American slaves, all right? And even if you're from the Caribbean, all right, well, I'm from the Caribbean. I'm from this. Guess what? You're a descendant of slaves, too, because there were slaves in the Caribbean. There were slaves in South. We are descendants of slaves over here, all right, in the Western Hemisphere. We can connect because we have a slave ancestry, all right? And that slave ancestry means that our ancestors were denied the things that immigrants who came over here got. And it's time for us to start honoring them, plain and simple.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I'm going to continue this conversation, and I'm already putting the show together for next week. Part two, Sounds of Blackness. What my strategy is, Queen, is that we're going to keep talking this conversation, Sounds of Blackness, because you didn't hear me talking about this earlier, Queen, is that what I've realized is that even, you know, when I was reading your posts, every time I'm in the company of talking to people, communicating with people today, I've come to realize that I'm talking to people who are indoctrinated based on what's coming out their mouths. I'm hearing the indoctrination. I'm hearing the blackness they captured in, the color caste system that they don't want to see to break loose. And this is why we call it breaking free of the indoctrination. And so what we want to do is I'm going to treat these shows as we're closing out these last 3 months, is our recruiting to getting people to get signed up to become members with us, and so we can get our numbers up and get a lot of members. You know, I need everybody. You know, Queen, you said something. We need everyone to get on your page and send people to this show for Sunday, okay? We need everyone. I mean, it shouldn't be just me and Queen. It should need to be everybody. Everybody who called himself involved with this, okay, who's talking about, you need to get on your Facebook page and you need to tell them about this show on Sundays, okay?
Let me tell them how to do that, because a lot of people don't understand. If you go to events in Facebook on every Sunday, I would always say give yourself a 3 to 4 hour window. Once you join the event, once you click that you say that you're going, it allows you to invite your friends. And I think if me and Michonne and Leonard and Jean and Marcus, if we invite 100 friends, that's like 500 friends that will, you know, at least have an invitation to the show. So that is how you build your audience. So I think that, you know, we all can contribute in that manner and getting the word out.
Right. My strategy is, you know, using what Queen talked about, that very thing. There is no reason why we can't have our lines blowing up. And Leonard, the whole idea is to get them signing up and emails on that with you, okay, where they get in the newsletter, where we start filling up our mailing list. We want to get our numbers up to 10,000 or more for 2019. We got to go. We're sitting at 4,200 right now on the page, and we must accomplish moving our numbers. And Marcus talked about we need to create a movement. Okay, we need to create a movement, all right, that we got people that come up.
And may I say how you do that? How you do that is that you have to remember politics is local, but so is community development. Because people develop communities how? Block by block, house by house.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to put out there that also we are open to people who are interested in joining us. We're open to allowing you to actually host chapters in your city so that Descendants of American Slaves is not just a radio show, it's not just a Facebook group, it's not just a Facebook post, but it's an actual site in your city, in your town, on your block, so that you will have a place to go, a person to contact, in order to get more familiar with the Descendants of American Slaves and become an active member of the organization itself. So that is how we will grow in numbers, because they can have an attachment to the physicality of the Descendants of American Slaves.
You know what? And that's what we got to continue building on that. You know, the sounds, I'm really liking this idea, the sounds of blackness. Leonard, you think this is a good move to go into this, talking about the sounds? Because what it does is that you need to talk about that every time, the sounds of blackness, what that means. Where did that come from? How we got indoctrinated into that? That's the Dossie language. When people think about Dossie, we want people to think about, man, those people, those guys, they overthink things. We want them to say, man, those guys break down stuff. We have to be willing to break down stuff to our people to make them think. You know, it's that right now, I got on my page now. You may not like who I am, but I try to make you think, okay? That's our strategy. I'm going to make you think. You know, I got right now on my page, I'm always stealing something from somebody else. I don't want you to think like me. I just want you to think. I don't need you to think like me. I just want you to think. Think about why we call out, why the terminology black was even put in. And who does that benefit? Hey, Keith, think about that. Who has color benefited, Keith?
Yeah, it's real deep. I know they categorize us. It's a system-based thing. So it's real deep, though. I don't know. I think we don't stick together, and everybody else does. So I say everybody benefits from us being categorized.
Ah, now you just said everybody else benefits off of us maintaining we're black. Would you agree with that, Leonard?
Yeah, because here's the thing. It's let's just decode black and just call it slave, because that's what black is. If you black, you're Negro. If you're Negro, you're slave. Plain and simple. So when we decode it and say it's a slave and you're a slave, and you're operating from a slave standpoint, slaves can't own property. Slaves don't have any rights. The law doesn't apply to slaves. So if you continue to operate under that type of auspice, all right, you will never, ever advance. Okay, see, so like I said, and now you become chattel, or you become, and what was the whole purpose of a slave was so people could make money off of that slave. And people are making money. Understand something. We don't even control our own cosmetics or hair care, all right, because we're functioning and operating mentally like slaves, all right. We are still fighting for we're still fighting for social justice and equality. Meanwhile, everybody else is on economic prosperity, okay? we haven't gotten there yet because we feel like we still need. So I mean, and it's true. We there are some things, but we have to look and see what we have. We are United States citizens, all right, meaning that we have constitutional rights, and there are things that apply to us because of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment that apply to everybody else, and we just have to start using them. But like I said, is we have to see ourselves not as slaves, all right, as descendants of slaves, not as slaves, all right, but as people with lots of opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Marcus, you on the line? I brought you up. What you got? What you want to add to this conversation?
I'm not really paying close attention to the memorial service of my aunt, but I think I did catch some of it. And some of the things that always concern me is whenever we talk about black and how it benefits, you know, the versus good versus evil, black and white, you know, all that stuff. We know how we translate that or how we make that into something that we can, that's tangible, right? We talk about it. We got to make that into something tangible that people
yeah.
can relate to. And so I believe it all has merit. The question is, how do we make that tangible so that people understand it economically? I think the reason that we haven't progressed economically is integration is what I think killed us economically. And I could care less that I live next door to a white guy, right? It's always been about sharing the power, the resources, and the responsibility. And we got off track when we got to move next door to the white man. And I think that was essentially an intentional thing if you look back at it, but that's when we start to lose our economic base. I mean, I'm in the funeral home business, and there was a time when a white funeral home would not even bury you. And now those same people will go to them, and when they want all their money up front, they'll call me and expect me to do it for free or let them pay me overtime.
Yeah.
Okay. But I can tell you, I'm not ever going to put $6,000 in the ground and not get my money first. I'm a better businessman than that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Marcus, you got a good point, because I've actually seen in Chicago, in my old neighborhood, if you look at Google Maps right now, my old neighborhood, it's like a ghost town. I wish I had old pictures because we could go everywhere. And just about get anything you needed out of my old neighborhood within our community. And then, like I said, once we start being able to go to Cicero in Ford City or Woodlawn at Evergreen Plaza, or even we took our dollar, we took the L and took it to 63rd and Halsted, all right, and took the money out of our community into other communities. It became a thing where it was cheaper to get a 45-cent transfer to go to Ford City to buy you a pair of Converse All-Stars and school clothes and all of that kind of stuff than to stay in your own community. But what those community leaders needed to say was, listen, we got to keep our dollars here, okay, because if we don't, these businesses will disappear, okay, and nothing is going to take their place. And what ended up happening is, you know, you didn't get, like I said, those, you know, they you can't, you know, back then you couldn't sell a business in a black community to another, you know, maybe to an Arab or maybe to an Asian, all right. But still, at that time, there was not enough. Okay, they couldn't have every single business. So what did they do? Is they start burning their businesses down and collecting insurance money. So now you have, not only do you lose commerce, all right, because you think about it, that street that had all of those businesses was worth, okay, because you had businesses there, okay. Now those businesses slowly burnt down and you just had property left, okay? You went from having commerce to having nothing, worse than nothing. You had debt because those businesses were gone. And all of the dollars, it made it a permanent place where you could, you know, all your money, all your dollars would leave your community. See, so like I said, yeah, I got immigration hurt. Anybody just trying to talk about, oh, you know, you have a lot of people speaking against group economics and, you know, don't want to see us, you know, practicing the same type of benign neglect that we've always been captured by. We got to get out of that because we can't do anything until we start supporting ourselves. All right, and that's the whole thing is you know, we want to, like I said, is we want to support ourselves. We want to change our communities around economically. Matter of fact, that's one of the best ways and the first way to get that done. So.
Hey, you know, I'm having these conversations, and this is why I want to continue doing this right now. I'm on Queen's page right now. You know, I don't care, man. I don't care if they get mad at me. But the moment that someone say white out of their mouth, the white man, the black this, I'm calling them out, man. Listen, you're so busy want to act like you're so smart about what you're doing, but you don't even realize that you're speaking in an indoctrination. See, we have to help. And what I'm saying is that we have to be telling folks that we not black means that they're not white no more in our lives, okay? The moment that you stop saying you're black, they no longer be white, okay? The moment that you start saying that you're descendants of American slaves and you're honoring those that they continue wants us to forget, you start making them white in authority in your life. And I'm just talking about 28 Keith. That was one of the major things at the hospital. When I walked into the hospital, and I did this right after I read America's Little Black Book, sat down with Mr. Noah Shelton. I went to the hospital because 98% of the market that I work at the hospital is American Europeans. And I denounced, I said to them, I didn't care. I said it loud and proud and ready for the fight if someone's going to fight. But I said, today, me, Sean Daniels, want you to know that I am not a Negro, I'm not a black, and I'm not African-American. I am a descendant of American slaves. And I sat there and I waited for someone to rebuttal me. You know what, Keith? They didn't rebuttal me. What I was ready, Queen. I was ready for the fight. I was ready, Leonard. I was ready for someone I was ready to have the argument to tell them why I don't need your permission to call myself a descendant. I was ready to say that out of my mouth. But, you know, I never got the opportunity to say it. You know why? You know why I never got the opportunity to say it? This European male the European male older guy walked over to me and said, I already know that you're a descendant of American slaves. It messed me up.
and it should have. And it should have because they already know. They already know. But here's the problem with us. It's not getting people to say that they're descendants of American slaves. You have to give them something to be prideful about because that's how our people are. That's just what it is. That's just like I remember people used to say black was hard. You know, being black was hard. And I grew up in a time where black girls wanted to be at least high yellow if they didn't want to be white because black appeared to be hard. And then when we started to appreciate our broad nose and our kinky hair and our dark skin, then all of a sudden black became beautiful. So now being a descendant of American slaves, where is the pride in that? The only way that they're going to find the pride in that is that they have to have the knowledge of their history and understanding that slaves was not a voluntary position, and we were never inferior, and that not all slaves were captured and brought over here in chains. There were people who started out as indentured servants. And like I said on that same post, that it's almost like giving an alcoholic a sip of wine. You know he's only going to want more. So when we were being traded off and we were being negotiated away as indentured servants and they saw our value, they saw our skill set, they saw our abilities, then they say, okay, well, we want to get more of these or more of them And then they got greedy and started to invade the land, but they didn't invade the land for no slaves. They didn't invade the land for that. They invaded the land for resources. So not only now do I want your people, I want your gold, I want your oil, I want your salt, I want your herbs, I want all of the riches of Africa. And the only way that they could get some of those riches out of Africa was to enslave people by force, and they were not taking the least of them. They enslaved
tribes
and warriors and people that were willing to die and fight for their land. So we got to have an understanding that these slaves did not just surrender, or they were not just captured. You know, we got to give the in-depth history of what does it really mean to be a descendant of an American slave, and what did the American slave endure, and how did the spirit of the American slave not get completely broken, because you had those that were still fighting for freedom. And once they realized that they couldn't get back across the water, then they were trying to get up north. When they found out they were up north and they were still a nigger, then they tried to get further north into Canada. They were still fighting. That fighting spirit, that spirit to persevere over all of the conditions that not only European Americans inflicted upon us, but you got the Spaniards. You know, you got the Greek, you got the Dutch, everybody invaded Africa. But it was not for slaves. It was for their resources. And people need to know that history and know the riches of Africa. But as they're getting to know the riches, they also need to get to know the rituals. And understand, like Leonard said, we are tribal people. Why in the hell do you think that we continue to fight one another? Why do you think we continue to be divided? Because those old tribes, that DNA, that spirit that is embedded in you, came from your ancestor. And guess what? Your tribes were already enemies over in Africa. So you innately have this, not hatred, but this discord with one another. But what they didn't realize, what they don't realize, I'm sorry, is that at some point when we're talking about freedom and when we talk about justice and when we know it's about the color of our skin, whether we name it or claim it, we're going to have to come together as descendants of American slaves to change this country around, to turn it on its head, and to actually induct freedom, justice, and equality into this country. And this, the first thing they got to do is acknowledge who they are. So how are you going to get black people from saying black people to saying descendants of American slaves?
All right, listen up. We are at the conclusion. Yeah,
but you got
quick,
to disgrace the name black. That's all I'm saying.
I got a question.
Hey, hold up. Don't you get the opportunity, because I'm going to make you the last person to speak. Since you've been so quiet there, my brother, I'm going to make you the last person to speak. Queen, you're going to be the first to speak. And then Marcus, and then Leonard, and then Keith, you're going to close us out, okay? Go ahead, Queen, start us out. Queen, close it out.
I think I've said enough. I just want to say, I guess in closing, is that get out of your American history books. Get into your world history books or your African history books so that you'll know your entire knowledge of descendants of American slaves.
And I also want to add that get a copy of America's Little Black Book by Mr. Noah Shelton. That can help the process, start the journey. Go ahead, Marcus. Marcus?
Okay.
All right.
Well, I will say what I hear every morning, and that is there's a difference between a moment and a movement. And a movement requires sacrifice. That's all I'll say. You have to sacrifice. You want this movement to keep on.
All right. Thank you, Marcus. That's well said. Go ahead, Leonard.
I'm going to kind of chime in on what Queen was saying. What we have to realize is that American slaves were not weak, defeated, conquered people. American slaves were probably the strongest people in American history that America has ever known. Do you understand and truly know how strong it is to be a slave and to just continue dealing with the type of abuses, the type of torture, the type of lifestyle that it takes to be a slave? It takes incredible amounts of strength, all right, incredible. So that's something our ancestors, we would not be here had it not been for the endurance, the strength, the will, all right, the faith, all right, of our ancestors, knowing that one day we would be here. We are improvement upon them because they made the sacrifice in order for us to be here. And that's what I have to say.
All right. Now, you get the closers out there. You had enough time to get your thoughts together. And my brother,
no,
Keith,
I'm mesmerized, but I just got a question. So what are you going to put on the application, though? Are you going to put, am I a descendant of American slaves? I mean, that's going to be something to grab on when you claim that.
Yeah. D-A-S. Hey, listen. Let's not get captured an A. We put what we need to put there. That's the truth. I gave it them.
Well, nowadays, on most applications, to answer your question, Keith, on most applications, they give you an option to whether you want to disclose it or not. So if you don't find descendants of American slaves on an application, then don't disclose your race.
Yep, you are a United States citizen. That's all that matters, because as a United States citizen, you are covered by the U.S. Constitution. Nothing else gives
that's
you power
all.
Other than the United States Constitution, and that's all you got to
put. That's all that should matter.
Yeah, and that's what we're working toward as well, because that's what really
that's
matters.
What we
that's
work
what
toward.
Power is.
So, Keith, what are you going
to
say?
I'm just going to say it's so complex that you just can't have this one discussion about it. It's got to be a continuation. But I'm going to do a little research, though, because I always question, you know, how we became slaves, because there's so many stories of how we became slaves. And then we categorize with the word black, and then you use the word nigger associated with nigger. That's negative with black people. So I got to do a little bit more research. This is very interesting to me. This is very interesting.
Keith, this book for you to read is The Downfall of African Civilization by Chancellor Williams, and then read Introduction to African Civilization by John J. Jackson. Those are two good books you can read. It breaks down all of it.
Are you a Nigerian that's over the age of 65 and have a conversation?
Fine, what now?
Find a Nigerian
that's over the age of 65 and have a conversation, because more than likely he's caught up in that traditional folklore that his parents before them actually brought down to their children, because that's how the stories in the villages are told.
You want me to find one who just came over here, or one who's been living over for a long time? Because that could change.
Well, if they were born and raised in Africa and they lived in Africa past the age of 20, I'm pretty sure they got the folklore.
Okay. All right. And that's a wrap for the Focus Show. Follow one course until successful. I want to thank each and every one of y'all for participating in this show. And we're going to continue and be right back for part two. As far as I'm concerned, there's going to be a part 15 by the time we finish this show, The Sounds of Blackness, before 2019, because we're going to keep getting it until we're going to treat this, and everybody's going to come back and start listening to these shows. These last shows closing out 2018, It's going to be the most important shows that we're going to do. And so I want everybody to get people to come because we record them. I'm count part one, part two, part three, part three. I don't know how many that's going to be, but it's going to be the Sounds of Blackness breaking free from the indoctrination. Peace. Love y'all, man. Y'all take care.
All right. Later.
Conference call, y'all.